Until last year, Karel Jaromír Erben's celebrated collection of ballads, Kikice, the Bouquet, had never been published in a full English translation. Now we are lucky enough to have no less than two fresh translations of this classic of 19th century Czech poetry. Last summer, we spoke to the translator of one of the new editions, Marcela Sulak, and this time it is the turn of Susan Reynolds, whose translation appeared in a bilingual edition just before Christmas. She talks to David Vaughan.
We've been lucky with both the new translations of Erben's Kikice, as in both cases the translator is herself not just an accomplished linguist, but also a poet in her own right. The fact of having two such excellent and imaginative new versions brings the most famous collection of poems in the Czech language far closer to the English-speaking reader. Erben is to Czechs what the Brothers Grimm are to German literature, and every Czech child can recite extracts from these ballads of water sprites, witches, and maidens at the spinning wheel. I spoke to Susan Reynolds at the British Library in London, where she curates the Czech and Slovak collections, and I asked her about this renewed interest in Erben.
There's always been an interest in him, but until now he hasn't really been accessible. It's often said that a classic is something that everyone wants to have read, but nobody wants to read. But in this case, it's a classic which not everyone has been able to read, because until recently there were no complete translations.
And that is quite amazing, actually, isn't it, given how important it is to the Czech literary canon?
Yes, that's what I thought when I came to it from a musical background, and I was amazed there were no complete translations.
And you say you came to it from a musical background.
Yes.
Tell us more.
Yes, because people who think they know nothing about Czech poetry at all will often be familiar with four of these, or perhaps five. The four in which Dvořák bases symphonic ballads, The Golden Spinning Wheel, The Noonday Witch, The Water Goblin and The Wild Dove, and the cantata, which was given its premiere in Birmingham under the title Spectre's Bride, but is based on The Wedding Shirts. And so people may be familiar with the stories, but not actually with the poems themselves.
And you say that The Wedding Shirts, or The Spectre's Bride, as
yes.
Dvořák called it, had its premiere in
Birmingham.
Yes. How did that come about?
Well, Dvořák had a long and very affectionate relationship with England, and he was invited to write a work for the Birmingham Choral Festival, and this was a result.
And the tradition on which Erben is building is a tradition of both poetry and song, isn't it? This is something that is very central, isn't it, to Erben's work?
Yes, it is, because he started to write poetry as a young man, nothing very distinguished, but then he was taken up by Franciszek Palacki and given the commission to travel around provincial towns, scouring the archives for historical documents. And in his spare time, he wandered through the villages and collected folk songs, folk poetry, and, of course, the music to which these songs were sung. And he always believed, not only, as Herder thinks, that the soul of people is enshrined as music, but also that the music comes first and the words come later. So the songs were the important thing for him, and the words were not incidental, but certainly came second.
That's intriguing. So, in a sense, by sitting down and reading Kikice, the Bouquet, we're actually going the wrong way about it.
Well, that's why I've been very careful in doing these translations, to try as far as possible to preserve the music of the words. Mm. They all have different rhyme schemes and different rhythms, and for translating into English is a particular challenge because, of course, the stress falls always quite firmly on the first syllable in Czech. We don't have the same effect in English, invariably. But if you look at the Dvořák scores, you'll see that quite often he will set a phrase and then take the words away when he comes to present the final version. So I felt it was very important to try and preserve the melody of the poetry and not to sacrifice that as far as I could.
And so did you actually find yourself humming along as you were translating?
Yes. When I was doing the translation originally, I'd sometimes find it helpful to get up and walk around, see how it sounded if it's spoken out loud. And I enormously enjoyed at the launch there in London doing a reading of some of the poems, because I think these are very much poems which benefit from being read aloud. Of course, they can exist on the page, but because they're derived from folk poetry which was oral, then they're much better, I think, read aloud.
Which is, I think, a good cue for you to read us an extract from one of these 13 ballads in all, which are collected in the Kititse collection. What have you chosen?
Well, to begin with, because the Dvorak ballads are a starting point for so many readers, I thought that I would begin with part of the Golden Spinning Wheel, Zlati Kolovrat, because anyone who knows the Dvorak pom 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 pom, the opening where you hear the fanfares and the galloping horse, will recognise that, which I've tried to capture in my translation. Around the woods broad acres lie. A lord comes riding by. He rides a fiery jet-black steed, whose shoes ring merrily indeed, and all alone he rides. Dismounting at a cottage, hop, he knocks upon the door, clop, clop. Hello there, open up, I say. Out hunting, I've lost my way. Give me water, do. Out comes a girl, a flower so fair, she has no equal anywhere. She fetches water from the spring, sits at a distaff, modest thing, spinning, spinning flax. There stands a lord, thoughts all awry, forgetting that his mouth is dry. So fine and straight the thread she plies, he cannot turn away his eyes from the fair spinning maid. Now if her heart and hand are free, my wedded wife you'll surely be. He draws the maiden to his side. Ah, sir, I really can't decide without my mother's will. Where is your mother, maiden fair? I cannot see her anywhere. My stepmother comes home, good sir, tomorrow, and her girl with her, for they have gone to town. So that's the first section which sets a scene, and of course those of us who know the poem will realise that there are going to be dirty deeds afoot before too long.
And this is very much the stuff of fairy tale Europe-wide,
yes.
But it is also very specifically Czech, isn't it?
Yes, that is one of the great aspects of charm about these poems, that they're all located very precisely in a Czech setting. Many of the stories do have parallels in different cultures. For example, later on, this heroine comes to a very sticky, although temporary, end, and she ends up having her hands and feet chopped off and her eyes torn out by her wicked stepmother and wicked stepsister. But don't worry, all turns out well. But in Finland, we find in the legend of Lemminkainen, he meets a similar fate, and various bits and pieces are thrown into the river that goes around the underworld. His mother realises by seeing blood flowing from his comb that something terrible has happened. She goes down to the river and reassembles the pieces, is brought back to life, just as Dornichka is here. But this is a very specific Czech setting, and I've been on a walk through the countryside around Urban's birthplace in Milutin, and you can picture a horseman just like this one here galloping through these woods and fields.
Whereabouts is Milutin?
It's in South Bohemia, and it's still quite a small community, but very proud of its urban associations.
You mentioned that Erben put these ballads, these stories, in a very Czech, specifically Czech context. Are there any other things that make them stand out as being particularly Bohemian or Central European?
Well, even in the most supernatural poems, we always find them in a very homely setting, full of artefacts which would be immediately recognisable. For example, in the Noonday Witch, another of the poems which is famous from Dvorak, the mother is in her kitchen trying to cook lunch, her husband is coming home noonday, and the child is disrupting this, and the fire goes out. And she tries to get him to play with his toys. He has a little wooden hussar and a cockerel and a cart, simple peasant toys of the kind that would have been immediately recognisable from local setting. And this locates it precisely in this context. And also that the activities which people undertake, for example, spinning is very important. In Christmas Eve, the action starts just before Christmas in Advent, and the girls are sitting together spinning linen thread. There's one of the old village wives dozing by the fire, and the girls are all trying to outdo each other in spinning industriously because they know this is a way to win a bridegroom. And two of them go out on Christmas Eve to practice an old folk ritual of hacking a hole in the ice with an axe to see their fate reflected in the waters, to see if they can see the face of their beloved. And sure enough, the first one, Hannah, does, and there is Václav, and she's overjoyed. There he's in his green coat and his jaunty hat with the flower tied, just just as any peasant boy would be. But then her friend Maria leans down to look into the water, and she sees something very different. I won't spoil the poem for those who are going to read this, but certainly these little details of folk customs, peasant costumes, are very bohemian indeed.
You've already mentioned the difficulties in translating the language of Erben because of the different rhythms and rhymes in English. What about getting across this sense of rural bohemia, which is very different, I think, from the typical experience of people in the English-speaking world?
On the other hand, though, the theme of many of these poems is universal. And if the immediate setting may not be a parallel or immediately familiar, then that adds to the appeal of the poems, that we see these universal situations and legends in different settings. And so the author obviously was thinking very closely of where he'd found the poems. But I think for a reader who, for example, is familiar with the old Scots ballad of Edward and then reads Daughter's Curse, that will immediately ring a lot of bells. Here the dialogue is between mother and daughter, rather mother and son, but the structure and the rhythm are very much the same, and the shocking outcome as well, that the daughter has murdered her infant and the son has murdered his father in the Scottish ballad, brings the two together, and the horror of the situation is universal, just as the form and the diction are.
I think it's high time we had another extract from one of the ballads.
Yes, having had one which may be familiar to readers who know the Dvorak, I thought we should now look at one of the poems which would not be in the same way. And this is one of the longest in the collection. It was last one I translated. And this is one which picks up a motif which, again, is familiar of many other cultures. That of a child whose life has been signed over the devil by his or her father. And in this one, we find ourselves in the middle of the Bohemian forest in autumn, and we see a mysterious figure making his way towards us through the woods. Over the forests, mists are flowing grey, like ghostly forms in procession drifting by. To another country, the crane flies away. Bleak and unwelcoming, fields and orchards lie. Out of the west, the wind is blowing chill, and yellowed leaves are singing a song soft and still. Well known is that song, for every autumn season, leaves off on the oak tree whisper it anew. If those who understand, its words are but few, and he who understands to smile has no reason. Unknown pilgrim, in your sombre habit, say, with that long staff in your hand, and that rosary, and the cross upon your staff, who might you be? Where are you going to so late in the day? Where are you hurrying? Your feet are bare. Autumn is chilly, and cold dew lies there. Stay here with us, for good people are we. Everyone's happy, a good guest to see. Ah, you dear pilgrim, as yet you're only young, and no beard yet to hide your chin has sprung. Your cheek's just like that of a pretty maiden, but how pale and sadly faded and shrunken. Deep in their sockets, too, your eyes are sunken. Is your heart, perhaps, with secret sorrow laden? Does unhappiness on your body prey, pressing it earthwards with the years so grey? Handsome young man, don't go into the night. We'd gladly help you, if only we might. Maybe at least some aid we could provide. Come, don't pass by. Rest that body of yours. There is no grief that no remedy cures. Potent balsam rests in the trust to confide. Not once lifts his eyes, unhearing, unaware. Out of his dreaming, there's no way to draw him. On now he makes his way through the bushwood there. God give him strength for the pilgrimage before him.
And this is actually one of the less known of the 13 ballads in the collection, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I think it does deserve to be better known. We find that, particularly in this one, there is a strong Christian message, but you can also detect much older pagan overtones running throughout it, and the nature description of autumn in the Bohemian forest is, I think, very haunting, very evocative.
And Erben is incredibly important to Czechs, and I think there's no poet subsequently who has written without having Erben somewhere in the back of his or her mind. How important do you think Karel Jaromír Erben is to the Czech poetic canon?
Well, I think he's been absorbed, consciously or unconsciously, so deep into the mentality of so many poets that the influence is inescapable. And not only has he inspired poets, he's inspired sculptors, painters, parodies, recently, of course, a film.
And finally, if you could say a few words about the edition published by Yantar Publishing.
Yes, Mike Tate at Yantar has done a brilliant job with this. It's a bilingual edition, which is going to be, I think, very valuable, not only for students of Czech, but those who want to see how the music of the original words is reflected in subsequent settings and the compositions inspired by them. And there is an introduction, of course, which I think will help to place it in its context.
Susan Reynolds, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.